This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 25th, 2012, episode 494. Good morning, Horse World. Well, as you know by now, Horses in the Morning is now live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summer. Today, we bring you a highlight show from the Horse Radio Network to enjoy. If you caught this one already, please feel free to join us again live tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And of course, you can catch all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com or subscribe on iTunes by searching for Horses in the Morning. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook as well. Really Bad Ads will be back on Friday, so get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. With Really Bad Ads in the subject line. Today's feature episode is the Western Radio Show, episode number 124, called Trick Training. Alan and Tammy chat with some master trick horse trainers, and they learn all about their training program and what it takes to teach your horse some of the fundamentals of trick training. So take a listen. We hope you enjoy this morning's show, and we'll see you tomorrow morning live here on Horses in the Morning.
This is episode 124 of the Western Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network. Trick training.
Here we come, a roping and a riding. Can't stop now, the dirt as a flyer, but we're bringing you all the news that you need to know. Home on the ranch or on the road show, horse radios, wherever you're going, well, sit right back. It's a Western Radio Show. Sit right back. It's the Western Radio Show.
This is Alan Moorhead.
And I'm Tammy Strantz, and this is the Western Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network.
Tammy, it's getting to be fall time.
You know what? People ask me the seasons, and I really should pay more attention, but I'm all upside down, Alan. I know wintertime and summertime in Australia, and then I get mixed up in when the globe flips upside down, and I don't even know what season it is. Just if it's cold, I wear a sweater. If it's warm, I wear a t-shirt. That's all I know, Alan.
So you're kind of like me, and when I first get up, and it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. I go to the door, I step out, see what it is. I'll either come back in and put on shorts, come back in and put on jeans, t-shirt, long sleeve. It just, you know. It is.
I didn't even walk out. I look out the window and I'm like, what does it look like? Yeah. I'll guesstimate.
Right. Well, it's like one of them kind of a deals that if I go to a rodeo and don't do a good job announcing it, well, then I don't get the rodeo back and I lose a job. But the weather guys, they can be wrong 90% of the time and still keep their job.
Yeah, what's with that? That'd be the best job ever. Yeah.
It's going to rain today, and then it stays 100 degrees and sunshiny all day long, you know, and you fish.
Talking about that, Ellen, you know, when I came over from Australia, I had never heard the percentage of rain. In Australia, when I left, they just used to say, well, it's going to rain tomorrow, it's not going to rain. And then when I arrived in the United States, they're like, it's a 20% chance. I was like, you're giving us a percentage? Really? You're not even, like, going to, like, make a confirmation on your decision. I remember that when I first got over here. I'm not sure what Australia does now, but I was really surprised that they wouldn't even make a commitment.
So the Australian weather guys would just say, it's going to rain tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be sunny tomorrow.
And then if it doesn't, they'll be like, well, we gave it a best shot.
Yeah. No rain tomorrow, so you can put shrimp on the barbie.
Did you actually see, I don't know how much news you watch, Alan, but they actually had a tornado with fire that was on the news a lot the other day from Australia? Nope.
A tornado with fire.
Yeah, it was like a whirlwind of wind that actually went through a big bushfire, and it showed you that this tornado that went, I think it was like 80 foot up in the air. It was all a fire, and it lasted for 45 minutes all across the red dirt in Australia. It was actually really beautiful.
Right. Yeah, unless your house happened to be standing in the way.
Yeah, it was in the middle of the outback. There was nothing in there but red dirt and and shrubs, mesquite, or I thought it was mesquite, but, you know, the Australian outback desert grass, whatever they call it.
And a camera.
Anyway.
And a camera just out there in the outback.
Yeah, and a camera, dude. Yeah,
that's really, really cool. You know, that's wild.
Yeah. Yep.
So how is Bam Bam doing?
Bam Bam. Yeah. Bam Bam is amazing. Bam Bam is the best $250 I have ever spent towards my rehab after the accident, Alan.
You gave $250 for that horse?
I spent $250 to buy my registered miniature horse.
$250?
Yeah. But some of them, I've sold one for $15,000 when I went to the trainers. It was some national champion driving horse, and it was beautiful. Yeah. Not that Bam Bam's not beautiful, but it was a show horse. But I really like Bam Bam. He's amazing, Alan. He makes me happy. And when you see something so cute and so little and so, you just can't help but smile. But
well, you know what? It's this kind of a thing that I'm really disappointed that I was 9 days in Fort Worth, Texas, not too far from you, at the Reichert Celebration. It's 14th celebration. Okay. And my friend from right down the road in Texas never came up to visit. I don't know. I don't know who I'm talking about, but her initials are Tammy Schrantz.
Yeah, right. But see,
that's all right.
Bring it up on the show.
Yeah.
Well, see, some days, Alan, I'm like that little kid that always stays in the shallow end of the pool, Alan.
Yeah.
If I stay close to the ranch and I feel good, then I'm okay. The more I travel away from the ranch, then the more scared I get. And I'm actually not good with traffic, Alan.
Yeah, I guess.
I call it probably post-traumatic stress.
I swear, and it's understandable. It is understandable, absolutely.
I actually left my cell phone in a friend's truck the other day, and he drove it 3 hours across the other side of Dallas, and yeah. I wouldn't go pick up. I made him mail it back because I wouldn't go.
Right.
So I lost my cell phone for 2 or 3 days because I wouldn't drive it.
And speaking of the Reichert Celebration, I thought we were going to get 4 in a row. You remember we had Jay Starnes and Christy, his wife, on the show last year, I guess it was, after he won his third big slot class in a row there at the Reichert. And, man, he had a really, really nice horse, really nice go. But Rusty Green from out in Texas, pleasure trainer, won the big class, the Saturday night one that, you were supposed to come to, and I'm guessing that you still have to consider it a success because Jay Starnes from South Carolina was second.
Really? That's wonderful.
So he's been first, second, and
wow, that's amazing.
If I get a pleasure horse and we're going to go for the big classes, you know where it's got to go.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But and one of the cool things, too, is they had some POA classes. The POAs were there, the Ponies of America, and one of the big-name trainers bought one because of the Reichert does this big stakes classes deal where they have designated money, and it was a $6,000 purse stakes class, and it's guaranteed money through that. And one of the big-name trainers had purchased one of those yearling ponies, brought it back and showed it, and the really cool thing was after it they were lining up for the judges. The judges looked and they had handed in their cards and walked out, and the gal just kind of reached up with a leg and had this horse go to its knees, go to its hip, it laid down in front of everybody, kind of stood up. It was cool. She put a little trick button on that horse.
Oh, that's cute. I want Bam Bam to do tricks, Alan.
A little personality. You do.
Yep, sure do.
Well, that's a good thing because you may learn how to do one today.
And I actually met some people at AmeriEquine, the equine show that was in Fort Worth, Texas, and I actually cornered them and asked them 60 million questions about how to train Bam Bam to do tricks. Since I wasn't riding with the accident, I thought, you know what, if I can't ride, I'm going to do something else just as cool, and I'm going to teach Bam Bam how to do tricks. So I found the right people at imagineahorse.com and asked them to come so we could ask them all the questions about trick training, Alan.
Cool. Sue and Alan DeLaurentis going to be with us today. Let's talk tricks.
And on the westernradioshow.com this week, we have Sue De Laurentiis from Dripping Springs, Texas, and we are talking about trick horse training from imagineahorse.com. So, hi, Sue. How are you doing?
I am great, Tammy. How are you?
I'm great.
And kudos to Tammy for getting that last name right.
Oh, she did a great job. Yeah.
I dread pronunciating last names. Alan, you're like the expert last names. I guess with a rodeo list of entries that come in every weekend for you, if there's a last name out there, you've probably seen it.
Now, what is the ethnic background of that name, De Laurentiis? Is that Italian?
Oh, my gosh. It's just a French name, but the people are Italian.
Oh, okay.
Don't ask me to explain it.
Oh, so you like French food and Italian food? So.
I do, and the wine.
That's okay. We do too. We like all food. So, and that's a whole other story. But anyway.
Yeah,
food again, Alan. Always bringing it back to food.
This is. Do you use food to help your horses do tricks?
Absolutely, absolutely. They have to have a paycheck. We all get paychecks, right?
Well, sometimes.
Well, in an ideal world, we would.
Yeah, we share the wealth here at the westernradioshow.com.
Well, great. Well, my husband just picked up the phone, and he may join us at least for part of this.
Cool.
Good.
So I'm not outnumbered again.
No, you're not.
That's a good thing.
And two Allens must be better than one, right?
Exactly right. Only my name only has one L in it, so it's
okay.
Yeah, my parents couldn't afford the second L for it.
Sue, bringing it back to trick training and horses, tell us a little bit about how you and your husband got started in trick training.
Well, we've been together about 12 years, I guess. Doesn't seem possible, but Alan spent about over 20 years of his life studying classical horsemanship, and Alan, give him the short version of how you did that.
When I was studying classical horsemanship, high school training of horses, you know, like fancy dressage and classical dressage, and I bought a book called Training the Haute Ecole by Chuck Grant. And Chuck Grant, in 1948, judged the first dressage contest in the United States, and he was known as the father of American dressage. And he put 16 horses to Grand Prix level, but his real calling in life was exhibition horses. And so he wrote a book about trick training, because in his generation, we're talking to guys that, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and stuff like that, those guys called trick horses high school horses.
Right.
And so he wrote this book called Training the Haute Ecole, which is French for the high school. Well, I bought the book by mistake, thinking that it was about fancy dressage. And at first I looked at it, and I go, well, that's not what I want to do. And it sat on my shelf for a little while. And then I picked it up and read it, and I realized where Chuck was coming from. And there's probably no one more qualified to understand that no matter what a horse's ultimate discipline is, no matter what level the horse might compete, trick training is good for them, because they develop a very clear understanding of requests and successes. There's no gray area in trick training. Either the horse steps up on the pedestal or he does not. Either he pushes the ball or he does not. Either he retrieves the ball or he does not. And the list just goes on and on. So the horse, it's very cut and dried for the horse. The objects, we use a lot of objects or stage props, and those help the horse make sense out of our world. And for young horse training, see, that this helps young horses understand that they they're not living in the wild, running free in wide open fields. They're enclosed. They've got fences and gates and lots of things that they have to learn to deal with. And so trick training helps the young horses, and adult horses, of course, but it works especially well with young horses, to understand the world of humans. And that our requests, while they might seem a little unusual, are not unreasonable.
So are you in a way saying that teaching horses tricks at first will give them a basic understanding to where they could understand things better if you started to ride them? Riding training?
Yeah,
absolutely. It's proven time and time again with all of the horses that we've raised. A lot of time they're old enough to ride, right, which we think is like sometime after 4 years. They are so far ahead of the game mentally
Yeah.
That you just get on them and start riding them.
Yeah. Because I mean, you were talking about either they push the ball or they don't, either they get on the pedestal or they don't. And in my mind, I'm thinking either they move the shoulder over or they don't. They turn right or they don't. They turn left or they don't. They move the hip or they don't.
They develop an ethic.
Right.
First, it's a sort of a can-do ethic. I can do this, you know. He might be asking me to do something that seems a little odd, but I can do this. I can do this, right? Next thing you know, it turns into a want-to-do work ethic where they want to do these things. And so all of a sudden, you have a horse that starts offering you behaviors that you have shown him. And then he'll, you know, the thinking horses start offering variations of behaviors. And if you're a good trainer, you will notice that when your horse offers up something that you can use later on, if you capture that behavior, it's a done deal.
And it depends on what their thoughts are, too, because, I mean, if you're having good thoughts and it's good things, you're okay. And if some of these mean horses are having bad thoughts, and they're, you know.
Well, you know, most of the time, like all the horses that we race, the odd behaviors that they offer you are simply things that you have already taught them to do. And so they don't really have bad behaviors. They just have a very curious variety of behaviors.
Most of the bad behaviors are taught horses by people.
Oh, yeah. They're people problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sue and Alan, do you find with your training that there's obviously some breeds are suited for things better than others with jumpers or cutters or reiners? Or do you find that with trick training? Do you find some breeds pick up things a little faster than others? Or do you find that they're pretty even across the breeds?
Well, we hate to sound biased about that, Tammy.
Go ahead.
You know, it's okay, we don't.
A lot of folks in that demographic I was telling you about a little bit earlier do not investigate why particular horses were bred. For instance, quarter horses are bred to be working horses. Thoroughbreds, that's obvious. They run. You know, cutters, reiners, jumpers, all of those horses. There are some breeds that were bred through thousands and thousands of years to be companion horses. So they think a little bit differently than a horse that was bred to do work, such as cutting. So companion horses obviously would be Arabians and Andalusians and, you know, any number of horses. But
not any number, but there's a limited number.
A limited number. We've trained horses of many, many breeds. Drafts, a lot of gypsies, light draft horses, a lot of crossbreeds. And really, it's kind of interesting because it depends on the personality of the horse. And we call trick horse candidates horses that might be Houdinis of the horse world, you know, that want to play with things to let themselves out of barns, or that are really, really inquisitive. But then on the other hand, really dull horses and horses that have encountered problems in behaving due to whatever, and their relationship with people should be improved. A lot of times, trick horse training helps them improve that relationship so that they're not dull and they're not afraid or too intimidated to interact with people.
We've seen a lot of horses come alive, you know, that were previously sort of shut down and closed off and rather stoic, right? And start all of a sudden trick training, they start realizing that they have a way to express themselves. Like I recently trained a little miniature donkey, and he was a very stoic little fellow. You know, he would. I realized that donkeys live in a parallel dimension, and that parallel dimension runs on donkey time. It's not like humans, right? And anybody that trains mules or donkeys will tell you the same thing, that, you know, they are a thinking animal. They're not a reactive. We're a flight species as such, and so a lot of times you have to kind of wait them out. They will of their own. They will decide when they want to do something. Okay. But this little donkey, while he was a bright and he was a little champion jumper and a little coon jumper and a driving donkey, he didn't express himself very much. Well, just you know, about 10 days or 2 weeks into his training, after I had taught him to smile on cue and to sneeze, believe it or not, on cue, all of a sudden, he realized that he could reach out and talk to people. And boy, did this little guy come alive. I mean, he is
cute.
Looking at you, and he's turning his head around, and he's wiggling his ears, and he's making expressions, and he's talking. You know, he really learned to reach out to humans with something he had never in his life experienced. He only did what people told him to do. He'd never learned that we listen. And that's the key right there.
That is so cute, Alan.
Now, this little donkey is going to be on the Nickelodeon TV channel. They're filming a little episode for him, and it'll be on a little competition, sort of like Pet Stars. He's out in California right now.
Lord, Tammy's already on Facebook or whatever, trying to find a miniature donkey for the place.
Gallon Onkin has 40 of them. You know, these people with miniatures can't have just one. You know,
I have just one.
Do you?
But yes, for right now.
Yeah. Well, get you a little miniature pedestal and go to work.
I know. I'd love to teach him tricks. I know when I'm looking for a timed event horse, I look for a horse that is smart and one that's lazy. I like a horse that's a little lazy, one that when I let go of him, he's going to come back to me.
Isn't that nice?
It takes
a human with a little bit of gray hair to appreciate horses like that.
One of my other students told me better lazy than crazy.
Yeah.
What characteristics do you look for besides one that's hungry?
horses that look at you with both eyes. That's a very quick, easy assessment. If horses will look at you with both eyes, that means that they're fully engaging both sides of their brain.
Uh-huh.
And horses that when you move around them, like if you move your hands, you know, like you bring your hands up towards their face and stuff like that, don't shy away. You know, that they're, yep. You know, if I was helping someone assess a possible horse, you know, that they, you know, uh-huh. they were thinking about getting this horse and we'd like to do this or that, you know, there's a few sort of tests that you can see. You know, does the horse have a previous positive feeling about being around humans or is he wary? And these wary horses can be very long-term trying to get them over that, because, you know, once you teach a horse to be afraid of you or that he has a reason to run from you, mm-hmm. you know, that's a huge hurdle to overcome.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't, you know, like one thing we do not do, we don't believe in this typical round penning of horses, you know, where you chase the horse until he gets so tired that he gets disgusted and wants to find another way out.
Yeah.
But what we have found and what we believe is that kind of fries the horse's mind, because all of a sudden what you've done with the horse right up front is you tell the horse that you are to be feared, or that you need, that he needs to be scared or startled or run away from you. And then you have to go through this process of convincing the horse, well, I really didn't mean that. I'd really like you to come to me. We would prefer to start from a position of trust and then just continue to build on that and never break it.
Yeah, and, well, I find, too, that there's some horses that just have an attitude that they're not going to do that kind of a thing. I've got one that looks at my wife has a mare, and she's a gritty mare, a barrel horse, and, I mean, she really runs, and I guess it's something with some of the easy jet breeding in there and that kind of a thing that makes them a little hot. And she looks at you with both eyes, but ears are pinned and her mouth's open, so
Well, you know, we need to make clear that we don't suggest that barrel horses and cutting horses and all
oh, yeah.
that they be trained like this. However, we do believe, and have been told by a number of people that raise racehorses, that this type of training really does add a different dimension where the horse really wants to do what you're asking it to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not for everybody, and it's not for every horse. It just works for us and our customers and the horses that we've trained and raised.
Yeah, you know, a big aspect of our kind of training is it gives the horse owners or the breeders something to do with these horses while they're too young to actually learn a competitive discipline. And so what it does, it starts teaching you, it gives you a way to teach the horse how to learn.
Yeah.
So when it comes time to start, a genuine discipline with him, he's already learned how to listen to people, and that that your requests are rewarded, right? You know, I mean, if he does what you want him to do, then there's something in it for him, and so they look forward to their time with you instead of just drudging their way through it, because you're going to make, you know, it's easy to get on a horse's back and make him do stuff. That's why there's tens of thousands of trainers outside, very good, successful trainers. You can make a horse do a lot of stuff. The key is getting a horse that wants to do. You know, and that's the big difference in Imagine a Horse and, you know, the philosophy of Imagine a Horse. You get a horse that wants to be with you, that wants to do these things, that offers up things to do. And, you know, some people don't want a horse to anticipate. We love horses that anticipate.
And it's just like, it's just like for humans, if you make your job fun, if you make your work fun, well, then, you know, you're going to have a better time and more enjoyment. And a case in point of that, I witnessed at the Reichert Celebration, a big pleasure show just a couple of weeks ago. And during one of the POA futurity classes, golly, name slipped me again, lady who is really AQHA and a paint shower and that kind of thing, had one of these POAs in there. When it came time for lineup, had an awesome little pleasure class, and then came time for the lineup, and when the judges were walking out of the arena, she just reached up there to the shoulder and tapped him, and the, you know, the horse laid down. She got, it was really cool, you know. So she had put a little button to trick on that horse too from the back, but you could just tell that that little POA just had a big time doing that deal.
Something that that we've had people say to us a few times when we've sent horses home, after we've taught them to learn and put a lot of buttons on them too, is things like, oh my gosh, you didn't tell us what a responsibility this was. And then when you ask them about it, it's like, well, the horse, it has to be with you every day. It's begging to do stuff. And we don't see that as a horrible responsibility. We see that as what that horse, as how it should be.
These kinds of horses that we turn out aren't like bicycles that you just hang on the wall when you're not playing with them. You know, you it becomes very compelling. You walk out to your barn, and you walk out to the, you know, we don't keep horses in stalls unless they happen to be in training or for some reason, but we always put a pedestal in the stall with the horse, and so the horse, if he wants to, he can step up, right? And 9 times out of 10, if you, in our barn, if you walk out into our barn, the horses will be standing up on the pedestals, looking at you and smiling at you as you come in through the door. You know, we teach all our horses how to smile. And basically, you know, it's kind of a way for them to reach out and ask for attention. So, you know, if you walk out in your barn and your horses are standing up and smiling at you when you walk in the barn, it's kind of hard to stay out of the barn.
They're like, hey, look at this, Mom.
But let me ask you this: on the other side of that, does that not create a deal to where then the trick is going to keep your horse from getting on the pedestal? I mean, like if you're just out and about and you have a pedestal around, they're going to run, get on it, and there's, I mean, you know, you just want to give them that cue and that kind of a thing, or you mean, you know, like it's just like I seldom will keep a horse, you know, pinned up in a round pen unless I'm out of other pens or something like that, because that's a place of work. And I want them to associate that when they're in that round pen and we're getting ready to lunge or we're getting ready to do whatever, then that's the time for that. And, you know, the stall is their free time. Does that not just create a horse that's just going to be just doing that all the time? Or does there still wait on a cue?
Now, we do have some horses, if they're left in a pen with, we have 3 different round pens out behind the trick barn. And we've got these things called agility platforms. An agility platform is a multi-level pedestal, kind of looks like a wedding cake with a big base on it, and then a center area that's raised, and then even another center area that's above that. So there's like 3 different levels on it.
Right.
And if you take our horses and happen to leave them in a pen for a little while, very often you'll look out there and the horse will be stepped up on that platform. A lot of times with his head down and almost as if, and probably asleep.
Mm-hmm.
They like being elevated. It's probably kind of like some kind of atavistic sense of security when they're on the high ground.
Okay, so, that folks, Google atavistic. I don't know how you spell it, but Google, look it up.
Atavistic means like a primitive way of thinking.
Oh, okay.
But to finish the answer to that question, Alan, it does not prevent our horses from doing what we ask them to do, right, and responding to our cues and so forth. Not at all.
Although the pedestal becomes a self-rewarding behavior, which is one of another curious aspects of Imagine a Horse, and that is a lot of these tricks that we teach the horse, we don't have to give them food or petting every time they do them. They start to enjoy the stuff, like pushing a ball around with their nose or stepping up on a pedestal. They like doing this stuff.
So the pedestal becomes like a stall bar.
And the pedestal especially becomes a place of safety. And so sometimes with some horses, if you're out there schooling them at liberty and you put a little pressure on him, if he feels a little confused, he might go over there and hop up on a pedestal, mm-hmm, just because in the past that was a way for him to relieve or ameliorate a little bit of pressure that was put on him. And so what it does, it gives the horse a way to be in control of his environment, which most horses have never had. I don't know if Sue addressed this with you, you know, but horses as a flight species spent millions of years evolving, running away from any perceived danger or threat. But right. where did they run to? They didn't have any place to run to. If you teach them that the pedestal is their safe spot, then all of a sudden a thinking horse, can control the internal stress that he might be feeling or pressure, and he has a way to lower the threat level or the stress level, and so they'll step up on a pedestal just because they've learned that they can be somewhat in control of the world around them, which is a really good thing.
Okay, so quickly as we get ready to close this out, what is the easiest trick that some of our listeners at WesternRadioShow.com...
That was my question, Alan. I want Bam Bam's first trick.
Okay, right. I'll be quiet. You ask it.
No, go ahead, Alan. I'm with you.
So you want me to tell you how to smile?
I mean, oh, that would be great.
Smile, that, no, you know, there's actually five different areas of trick training. Each one of those different areas has their own first, you know, sort of a place where you can start. The five areas of trick training are like our pedestal training, liberty training, the tricks of engagement, tricks of gait, and the tricks of submission, okay? And like a trick of engagement would be teaching a horse to smile. And the way you do that is you take a cookie and you put it in your hand and you close your fingers over it and you hold your hand down with the palm up and the fingers closed. But the horse can smell the cookie in your hand, and he will take his lip and kind of wiggle his lip around, and then you open your hand and let him have the cookie. And so he discovers that if he comes down and touches your hand and wiggles his lip back and forth, it's like when they're grazing and they push the old leaves mm-hmm. off to the side to get that one little blade of grass. Okay, so once he learns to wiggle his lip, you'll open your hand and give him the treat. Then little by little, you shape that behavior. You mm-hmm. instead of having your hand held out in front of you with the palm up, you turn your hand up, hold it at your side, kind of like the old cowboys and Indian saying how. You know, he holds his yeah. hand up, his palm forward, and says how. And you hold a cookie in your hand there, and the horse wiggles his lip, and then you start putting a cue on his lip with the bottom side of your index finger. You take mm-hmm. your fingernail and kind of scratch his lip and get him wiggling his lip, and then when you see him raise that lip, you use a bridge signal and say, good, and then you give him the treat as quickly as possible, because you can't really feed him the treat quick enough to indicate to the horse exactly what motion did he do that was good. So they you use a bridge signal. Clicker trainers know this. That's when a clicker trainer would click. Well, we don't use a clicker. We just use the word good.
Right.
And so you accomplish a couple of things. One, you teach the horse what good means, and then also you as a new trainer, you learn how to micro shape a behavior, because what you're constantly doing is looking for just a little bit of improvement each time. And if you're observant and you time your bridge signal with improvement, then that's actually the key to training, because all training is lots of little baby steps and little half baby steps. You know, you don't jump from point A to point B. You got a lot of little things in between. So that's teaching a smile is a good way to start to learn how to be a trainer, you know, to develop your powers of observation, your timing, but most of all, how to reward the try.
Right.
The trick will come. The try is what's important.
Yeah, and that's with everything. So if that's the first trick, what's the last trick? Like, if that's the what's the college trick? Is that the Spanish walk, or what's the
Spanish walk is actually no, the Spanish walk, I don't think there is a last trick.
You're still trying to work.
We haven't found it after 20 yeah. some years.
The sort of the last stages, something that you always work towards is being able to work your horses completely at liberty, where they will do, they're just going to hang in there and do everything you ask them to do with no lead rope.
Yep. Awesome. Well,
so what kind of cookie you're talking about? Like a chocolate chip or a Oreo?
Well, Alan likes chocolate chip, but most of our horse start to finish horse treats is one of our sponsors, and they make a treat that's very small, about the size of the end of your little finger, and short, And they come in really great flavors like peppermint and banana, believe it or not, but it's start to finish. And the reason that we use a small cookie is so that the horse doesn't forget what he was being rewarded for.
Yeah. You know, right now, start to finish has a promotion on. You go to your local tractor supply store, buy a bag of treats, and down in the bottom of that bag of treats is going to be a coupon that lets you, with the link, how to
get
a free
month of training with you guys.
A free, a free DVD called "Using Treats as a Training Tool."
Oh,
it'll walk you through the links how to download a free DVD.
I think Hanson would play really dumb, Ellen, so he got plenty of treats. He'd be like, "Man, I don't understand. Feed me more."
Yeah. I understand.
Well, that's awesome. And on the website, you guys have DVDs, and there's a bunch of YouTube links if people want to watch videos and all kinds of bowl products and bean bags and books and
specialized
blogs and
trick training tools. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much everything. And that's
One of the most popular things we did is we created an architectural set of plans for people to build their own pedestals.
Oh, perfect.
We get requests all the time. You know, can you send me a pedestal? Well, they're just too big. And actually, one is, you know, once you have one pedestal, that's just a good start. So we have a set of plans on the website that you click on the pedestal link over on the sidebar. And for a very, very nominal fee, we'll send you a very detailed set of architecturally professional, you know, like measured drawings and stuff like that, how to build your own pedestals.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Awesome.
That's the smartest thing we ever did, I think.
Well, that's super. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. And everyone can go to the website. That's imagineahorse.com. And there's a bunch of information on there. And grab a bucket of cookies, grab your horse, head to the barn. Thanks.
That's right.
From Dripping Springs, Texas, and imagineahorse.com for joining us on the Western Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. That's cool stuff. My horse is going to be smiling this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm going to be attempting to smile, Alan.
he's either going to be smiling or he's going to start getting diabetic. I mean,
yeah, you know, Hanson's really smart. He's lazy and he's hungry, and so he's a perfect candidate to be a trick horse.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't mind. And like I've told you before, my announcing horse, he likes those cinnamon discs, and he likes butterscotch and peppermints and spearmints and any kind of hard candy, pretty much. And he even likes.
That can't be good for their teeth, Alan.
Why? It's not like it stays on their teeth. I mean, they just eat it and it goes way back in, you know, it's.
Yeah, well, your dentist wouldn't agree with you. I mean, you tell your dentist the same thing.
I don't know. I'll have to find out about that.
I would like to teach Bam Bam tricks.
That's all you can do with Bam Bam.
Yeah, but he's so cool.
Yeah, that's all you can do. You can't ride him.
No, you can't ride him, but I am driving him still in the harness. I've kind of haven't really done a lot of that lately, but I've been washing him and brushing on him and making him all pretty.
Yeah.
But I'm going to teach him to start dragging some stuff and then get him a little cart, because I would like to teach him how to do mounted shooting from the cart, Alan, so I can drive him around the pattern and shoot from the cart. Wouldn't that be fun?
I would just imagine that he might turn into the fastest miniature pony pulling a cart in the world when that 44 goes off behind him.
That would be like a miniature pony drive-by.
Yeah. You could take the wheels and tires off of the cart, and you could just use it as a sled.
I've been working
it would slip
on it
right along that slick stuff would be coming out of him.
No, when I have people shoot here at the ranch, or when I have students who are actually shooting out here now, I keep him nearby, so he's getting used to the sound of gunfire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. No, I've been working on it, Alan. I have ear muffs that go on that are electronic that block out all the sounds, so I'm able to hang around, and Bam Bam hangs around, and he's getting really good with it now. Everything around here is broke to gunfire.
And I just imagine that y'all's place is kind of like ours. We're kind of out in the way, which is really a good thing around July 4th and New Year's, because you know, there's some places right up around here to do some fireworks. And of course, when the kids were younger, we'd always get some big ones and do them out in the pasture and that kind of a thing. And and you could hear the horse hit the edge of the stall every now and then when them big things went off. But ours have heard some gunshots too. And I've tried to shoot. I've tried, and not that it wasn't successful, but it was kind of strange. But I've tried to shoot off of Monty before a couple of times, and we were at the other end of the arena pretty quick. But
Alan, like, it takes forever to teach these horses to shoot. It takes – I've had students that come out for a month before we've even fired a 45 off the horse. There's a lot of things you got to do before you actually get, like, there, you know?
Yeah, and I know a thing about training tricks just a little bit here and there, too. It's when he was talking about the smiling thing, I can make my horses shake their head no. It's a simple.
You can make your horse eject you instantly at the sight of a bull.
A bull can do that. Yeah. And it's kind of the same technique too, because where that bull was kind of putting that horn right there in his flank. If you just take like a toothpick or a writing pen or something, and right there at the withers, where about 3 or 4 inches in front of where your saddle sits, there's a spot there that's got a nerve in it that controls like that part. And if you can just take it and kind of tickle them with it just a little bit, not poke it in them or anything, but just kind of tickle them a little bit through that hair, they'll shake their head no, because it's a reflex to shake flies off from that spot. It's really cool. It works.
You have to come teach me some stuff, Alan.
Try it. Just take your fingernail, or just take, and you could start with like a toothpick and just kind of scratch them along there with them, make them feel like a fly is crawling right across their withers, and they'll shake their head no. It's cool. I meant to ask you about that a while ago, but hey, that's from the Alan. Just go to alanmoorhead.com for more trick training tips.
No, go to www.imaginehorse.com for professional trick training ideas. Yeah. Good stuff, Alan.
So mine wouldn't work?
I'm not saying it won't work, but I'm just saying the guest we had, imaginehorse.com. Yeah,
by the way, Alan said when we were closing off just a bit ago, and he was talking about that little miniature donkey and his training on that and that kind of a thing, it's going to be featured on Rick Lamb's RFD show. So just go to Google Rick Lamb and find on his website upcoming shows, and there's going to be that little trick donkey. It's a far away donkey.
That just makes my heart warm. Oh, I love Shrek, Alan. You're getting me so off track.
Okay.
So off track, Alan. Tell us about next week.
Doesn't take much for either one of us, that's for sure. Well, you know, and it's kind of hit me that we've not really done anything on this, and I'm trying to get with Dr. Alan Donnell. We had him on the show before. He's got Equine Sports Medicine, and they were a big sponsor to Reichert, and I had sat down and talked with him for a minute about West Nile virus, and it's one of them kind of things that when you hear people talk about it on the radio, when you hear people talk about it on Facebook and things like that, it doesn't really hit you, and it's a scare, and I don't know how big of a scare it can be, but I'm getting in touch with Dr. Alan Donnell. We're going to record a show on West Nile virus, what it comes from, you know, where it is, and what it does to your horses, and ways to get your horses past it, and that kind of a thing. But when I was in Mesquite, Texas a few weeks ago for their finals their series, at night we would sit out on the edge, and you'd see that plane just fly his grid every evening, spraying out that stuff.
The mosquito stuff.
Yeah. And it was just kind of a surreal thing, you know, when he goes past you and he's 200 foot one way and he comes back the other way and then goes back again. And I guess they do it all with GPS or whatever. But I just felt it kind of important then to get this thing worked out and have a little discussion about West Nile virus. And I think it's going to be good. And Dr. Alan Donnell has agreed that, you know, he's going to set aside some time and talk to us. Just a matter of getting it done. I think it'll be good. Join us next
week. Awesome. Awesome. Sounds like good stuff, Alan.
Yeah, for sure. Tell them about the show notes and links from today's show.
Show notes and links are at www.westernradioshow.com. And we'd love to hear your feedback. Contact link is on the website. You can Twitter at Horse Radio. You can email Alan@horseradionetwork.com and Tammy@horseradionetwork.com. And check us out on Facebook. We're always posting funny stuff on there. Try and keep a little Western. That's Western Radio Show on Facebook. And we also have our own pages, Alan Moorhead, Tammy Schrons.
And
tell us about the sponsors, Alan.
Talking about Facebook. We have none right now. Talking about Facebook. It's me and you. Sponsored by Tammy at TexasShootingHorses.com and Alan at AlanMoorhead.com. But we got some great folks lined up coming up later on. Anyway, you were talking about Facebook, and I want to thank everyone for all the prayers towards my mom. She's having some back problems, some nerve problems, and posted something on it. And there's been some folks, you know, offering prayers through Facebook, uh-huh. and I appreciate it. And my wife's 94-year-old grandmother passed away, and thanks for all the prayers on that as well. And we certainly appreciate it. Facebook's cool. I mean, it's just family. It's huge.
Did you see the car that I posted that went through the barn, Alan?
I did.
Whoa. That's kind of one of those, hold the beer and watch this.
Yeah. You got to watch this. Be sure to visit all the great shows at Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Another good show. Folks, have your horses smiling. Tammy, it's been fun.
Thanks, Alan.
You betcha. And remember, folks, no matter how bad things look or how bad things get, the world looks better when you're looking down between the ears of your horse. Even if you're making them smile or making them shake their head no. Or making them bow and go to a knee. Just anything you want to do. It's all fun. It's good stuff.